Welcome to the latest edition of the Mind Gut Conversation podcast, a place to learn about new ideas from thought leaders in the area of optimal health, the science of mind gut microbiome interactions, food, and the environment. Today, I have the great pleasure to speak to Matt Lancour, enthusiastic rugby player and founder of the wellness brand Kombuchate. With a keen understanding of the science behind fermentation and a personal commitment to fitness and health, nurtured through years of playing rugby, Matt created Kombuchate, a kombucha brand tailored for athletes and fitness enthusiasts. His education in material science engineering has given him a unique perspective on the structural properties of natural ingredients, enabling him to innovate and develop kombucha that not only supports physical performance and recovery, but also aligns with modern nutritional science. Under Matt's leadership, Kombuchate has quickly grown from a homebrew project into a popular wellness brand, emphasizing organic ingredients, sustainability, and community involvement. His journey from an engineer and rugby player to a health-focused entrepreneur embodies a fusion of science, sports, and sustainable business. Welcome to the show, Matt.
One of the things I loved about reading your research was I found this integration of it, right? This new world medical perspective on gut health and the microbiome mixed with old world culture, right? Like all of our ancestors came to be through some form of fermented foods. And it's a reason that our bloodlines have survived, right? Whether you're like, I'm of Irish and Croatian descent. So my ancestors likely lived on fermented dairy products, fermented grains and fermented vegetables, and a litany of different fermented beverages. And we've lost, at least from my perspective, we've lost that connection to our fermented ancestral roots. And we're starting to see in the last 100 years that play out in a lot of unpleasant symptoms in the human condition. And what I'm loving in your research and what you're working on is this integration, right, of this old knowledge with modern Western medicine. And how do we bridge that gap together?
Yeah, so well said. You know, I mean, I couldn't have said this better. Clearly, I mean, there's a few things to consider. I mean, one is when you talk about the Western world, it's particularly the United States that has kind of almost like banned fermentation out of cooking and nutrition and drinks, maybe other than beer. And it's only recently been introduced and, you know, growing fairly rapidly. But if you go to other Western countries, in Ireland, in Germany, like when I grew up, you know, we always had fermented foods around, from the, you know, well-known sauerkraut to the ingredients that brewery used, brewer's yeast. You know, I would actually go as a kid to the brewery, to the local brewery, and get like a block of their brewer's yeast every week, you know, and we ate this on a regular basis. So it was, and then you go around the world and almost every culture has a number of fermented foods and drinks as essential, you know, cultural heritage. And in some countries, like Asian countries, it's the most developed. I would say, you know, Korea, Chinese foods, they all have this as an essential part. So I think the United States, and I'm not sure where this came from, maybe it was considered something that's contaminated, that's not clean enough, you know, has just really not had that tradition. And it's gradually coming back. And it's not coming back based on these cultural traditions. It's coming back now as fads, as modern things, you know, that all these companies popping up that make all kinds of claims about their fermented products, and so it's an interesting time, and you know, to sort out, and you know, we can come to that science later in our conversation. how this competition between scientific studies, which are slow, which are expensive, which many companies don't want to invest in because it's not certain that the benefit actually comes out of them, or that they show a benefit, and this increasing popularity amongst young people, particularly, is this you know, culture war almost. Is it's sort of interesting how this will turn out at the end.
I think that's a brilliant point about it being isolated to America, right? And this culture war, right? I love the double entendre or the double meaning there, right? And our social culture, but also the culture of our microbiome and the culture of microbes. And I think from my perspective, right, I think as I was a kid, we were raised on this idea that germs were bad and that all microbes, therefore, were bad. And so, you know, we were the generation, I'm 33 years old, we were the generation of the 99.9% antibacterial soaps. Mm-hmm. And the over antibiotic generation, right, where we were taught to eliminate germs, and there was no distinction between beneficial microbes and microbes that may not be so good for us. And I think coupled with the overuse of pesticides like glyphosate, for example, right, which will wipe out microbial life very similarly to antibiotics, that as an American culture, we've lost that context or that connection that the rest of the world has maintained up until this point. And it's because of the melting pot. It's because of the processed foods. It's because of a litany of different kind of consumer levers that have been pulled. But we're certainly seeing the outcome of that, right? Of that disconnection from our cultural roots in this culture war.
Yeah, and I should also emphasize, so in the U.S. and this modern renaissance of probiotics and beneficial microbes, it somehow seems to be the preferred path to put the good stuff into capsules, not have the natural fermented foods, but put it into these artificial capsules and pop a capsule every day and think that you're essentially getting the same benefit as if you eat a diet with a variation of fermented foods, not all at the same time, but you know, one day this kombucha, one day the sauerkraut, one day the kimchi. I think as Americans, for various reasons, partially is commercial, it's easier acceptable to have a bottle of pills, a probiotic pills that you pop. You don't even know where they come from.
Right.
And you only look at how many billion CPUs are in there and, you know, how many different microbial strains. You don't think what this would play a role in our natural food supply. So anyway, let me go back. This was a great introduction to the conversation. We're certainly on a very similar wavelength here. But let me start out with a question about how you got to the point where you are now. So you're an elite, you have been an elite rugby player, and you also have an engineering background, and now you have a startup company. And how did you get into the business of making kombucha or your own brand of kombucha?
Yeah, I mean, looking back on the 33 years of my life, there were several key components. And I'm going to try to close this loop here. I'm going to start out when I used to teach swimming lessons and lifeguard at my local pool. And one of the things that I found so interesting about this was meeting people who were scared to jump into a pool and seeing this transformation that would occur in them within an 8-week period to where they were then jumping off of a diving board or a high dive into the deep end. And what struck me was, how could I help in later in my life facilitate these changes in short periods of time. So that stuck with me. And I went on to the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. I got a degree in material science engineering, which is the study of metals, polymers, biomaterials, essentially how we harvest raw materials, process them into finished materials, and then turn them into products. Think of the periodic table of elements and how do we manipulate those to create physical goods. After I got the engineering degree, I was still competing heavily in rugby. I've been doing that since, it's been over 18 years now that I've been in the sport, and always looking for ways to be bigger, faster, or stronger, right? Tied to this 8-week swim lesson thing. How can I accelerate my growth? How could I accelerate the growth of my teammates in a short period of time? I got selected to play for the Chicago Lions in a national championship tournament out in Seattle. And that's where I first tried kombucha. And I had no idea what it was. I was ahead of the curve, right, in terms of healthy eating, in terms of my peers. And I found kombucha on an end cap after grabbing some Clif Bars and some bananas. I was kind of looking for something to drink outside of just water. And I pick up this kombucha and it says enlightenment and vitamins and organic acids and enzymes and all of these buzzwords. And I go, yeah, well, what's in this stuff? I go to read the labels and it's fermented tea and like algae and some like fruit juice. And it was all organic and cold pressed, and it passed my initial radar check, right, in terms of my label reading. And so I get back to the hotel and me and one of my friends, Joe Forgy, we tried it. We opened it and we take a couple little sips and we were like, what is this? It was overly carbonated. It was kind of sweet, but a little vinegary. And it wasn't bad, right? But I wouldn't have chosen it out of a lineup at the time if I was looking for something to enjoy. However, the next morning, a common thing for athletes in competition is the pregame poop. And everybody's got their own method. They get up early and they stretch, they drink coffee, they do whatever they think they need to do to relieve their bowels. And I woke up and just had the perfect poop and went on into my tournament. And I didn't think anything of it at the time, but I didn't realize that that was such a pain point for me and some of my teammates. But that was the first thing I noticed. The second thing I noticed was that I felt more regulated. I felt like the food that I was eating, the Clif Bars, the bananas, the caffeine goos, I felt like I wasn't having any issues. I was used to having some kind of either constipation or indigestion or something, but I considered it normal. I just thought, wow, I'm in a high stress environment and my body's reacting appropriately, versus once I introduced kombucha into the equation, it normalized the things that I was eating in relation to the stress levels. So that stuck with me. And professionally at the time, I was working for a German automation company, building and selling automated manufacturing applications. So think of that TV show, How It's Made, right? I would go into a different manufacturing plant and I would design these applications that would help them save money, be more efficient, or be safer, right? To stop people from cutting their fingers off, things like that. And I did this big project at a beer brewery in Wisconsin, and I felt like I was in Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. That was employee owned. People were kind of humming as they work, walking around, making this craft beer product. And I don't know if you're religious or spiritual or how you connect to a higher power in any way, but for me, I got hit with this like download that I was perfectly positioned with my athletic background and my background in large-scale food operations to do what we were talking about in the beginning of our introduction, which was, how do I bridge the gap for Americans into fermented foods and gut health? And how I wanted to do it was through a beverage that I ended up naming Kombuchade. And my thought was, if I could make it cool and taste good or be approachable, that I could help people as their first step into gut health. And I just received this vision that I was going to, for the next 20 years of my life, work on not only bringing this information to people, but also building a factory that would allow me to introduce products that would be high quality, that would be cost effective, and would allow somebody who was, say, microbiome curious, to very easily jump into the pool there.
Yeah, that's really remarkable to hear this. It's kind of, you know, you could call it a eureka moment that you had. You could call it a moment of intuition or gut feelings that really, you know, hit you at a very deep point in your unconscious to unleash that energy. I mean, it's kind of interesting to hear this, how you describe it. But it does make sense in retrospect. You know, if I'm sure at the time there were a lot of doubters, possibly even including your parents, who questioned the sanity of this decision. But in retrospect, it's always easier to put a meaning to it and say, this was exactly what I was supposed to do. You know, this was me. And often this question always comes up, and you know, with intuition and gut feelings. I mean, where does this information come from that some people have this instant access to? You know, I have my own theories about this. It's not really a topic of this conversation, but when you described it, I thought about this as a good example, you know. So one thing I was wondering, so fermented carbonated drink is not the first thing that that you would think about as a beneficial beverage for elite athletes. I mean, just think about the gas, the bloating, the gas being generated inside your gut. This did not, for you, having experimented with this yourself, this has never come up as an obstacle to for acceptance by athletes to have a carbonated drink rather than, you know, something, you know, water or juices or.
I think that was where I saw the opportunity, right? Was the kombuchas that I was drinking had added sugars and were overly carbonated. And I thought to myself, well, I see a lack of functional herbs in the space. Most of the products that I saw were a batch brewed green tea and then flavored with cold pressed fruit juices, and were more along the lines of a traditional soda replacement, highly carbonated, some sweetness, but mostly just green tea. And I took a 6-month online certification course in like health coaching, essentially nutritional therapy. And I started identifying herbs and reverse engineering them to be sort of helpful for somebody in an athletic perspective. And I discovered there was another way to brew kombucha. Instead of just a batch brewing, there was a way to do a continuous brewing, which would yield a less carbonated or more functional version of the product. It's more what you would find in a, you know, a great grandmother's countertop over in Croatia, right? For example, or in Eastern Europe, where you would have a 2.5 gallon jug and they would slowly drink from it. And as it hit about halfway, you would refill it and just have this continuous cultured microbiome going that was building over time. And so I saw an opportunity to make, for lack of a better word, a Gatorade version of kombucha, right? But without the added sugar, right? I wanted something that was closer to that profile, that was more drinkable, had more functional herbs and teas. And most recently, we've added some minerals and elements to the product in the form of a kosher Celtic sea salt, right? So getting some of those minerals and elements that help increase the electrical conductivity of our blood and allow you to, you know, as an athlete, be more electric. And so I think that was not, it wasn't something that I traditionally saw as drinking at halftime of a game, right? But something that you would drink on the Monday and the Wednesday and the Friday leading up to a match on Saturday. And I think that was what struck me the most, was this was something that if I consistently did over time would yield benefits outside of the immediate benefit of just drinking it that we commonly think of when it comes to a sports drink.
Yeah, so you mentioned a couple of times, so this is not just fermented green tea, even though, you know, there's a lot of health benefits to green tea per se, and there's polyphenols in it, and I mean, it is healthy and a lot of agents, you know, there's some studies, some pretty large scale studies that have shown, demonstrated the health benefits and benefits for longevity of drinking green tea on a regular basis. But you're going way beyond green tea. There's other elements in your, you know, kombuchate that has not necessarily related to the fermentation, but there are additional components like the minerals and like these herbs that may get additional benefits from fermentation. But it's a mix of health beneficial elements that you put together in this drink. So it's not just the standard kombucha that you buy. It's something that has sort of been engineered based on traditional information, science, and how good is the science to support the benefit of that? I mean, that's always the big question, you know. So in my own assessment of, I mean, ever since I have embarked in this world of social media and, you know, writing books for the lay public, I've sort of deviated from my 35 year plus career as a scientist that only evidence-based hypothesis driven results are credible, you know. And I think when you go to diet, that's too narrow. That's a too limited view of things, because there's sort of another piece of evidence, which is if some products have survived thousands of or tens of thousands of years being used by certain cultures, and they have not abandoned them, there has to be some benefit in it. It just would not make any sense at all that you continue something that has been handed down by tradition, by grandparents, great grandparents, unless it really has a benefit. And so I'm sort of trying to incorporate that as well, in terms of, it's not the scientific evidence, but it's the I would say the historical evidence or support. But to your kombuchate, what pieces of evidence do you have that this actually has the benefits besides being an enjoyable drink and making you feel good?
Yeah, this is a great question. And through my lens as a material science engineer, what I don't make claims about the product, right? It's something I stay far away from. What I did from an engineering lens was looked at the individual components, right? So we can look at ginger root, and there's tons of research that's been done into ginger's properties. There's tons of research that's been done into yerba mate's properties. There's tons of research that's been done into rooibos, a honey bush from Southern Africa's properties. green tea, oolong tea, all of the individual components have been shown to have the benefits, right? And I kind of let people do their own research in regards to the deep dive on those individual components. And then you look at fermentation itself, right? So fermentation itself is introducing, in our case, microbes of bacteria and yeast, of which we know the species of. They're consuming an energy source. In our case, it's a raw organic cane sugar. And what's unique about fermentation in kombucha is it's both aerobic and anaerobic, which means it's presence of oxygen and a lack of presence of oxygen. And when you look at the combination of fermentation in those two manners, what is yielded are organic acids, which all have their own individual research done into them. Vitamins, such as vitamin B and vitamin C, which have their own research put into them. And the probiotics, the beneficial microbes that come out of it. And so when I think about this question, right, I typically break it down into the building blocks. These are the building blocks that are going into the product. And the building blocks themselves have been shown to have a tremendous value. And so that's typically how I look through it. That lens is, I don't want to say kombucha will do this for you, but I can point to the research and say, hey, look at all these building blocks that we've put into this product, and what is yielded in the synthesis of these building blocks is without a doubt at least going to be neutral, if not extremely beneficial for you, just from those building blocks themselves.
You haven't, I mean, not that I think that that's would be an essential criteria, but you haven't done any microbiome studies in people, you know, like what we do in science. You do a randomized controlled, placebo-controlled study. One group will take the kombucha and the other one would have a consumer drink that tastes similar, but does not have all these ingredients. So that evidence that you would change actually the microbial composition and function probably does not exist. I mean, it doesn't exist for most fermented products. There's only a handful where I would say there's good evidence for that. Even with all the probiotics, you know, those studies are not, 99% do not meet the criteria for high quality studies. And so you almost have to, you almost can ignore it. But what other, you know, biological evidence do you have that this something that makes total sense to me, what you just described, this combination of things, what evidence is there for somebody who is a skeptic, you know, who said, he can make all kinds of, add all kinds of things, but until I see this actually changes the microbes towards, for example, more butyrate producers, so it's anti-inflammatory, or which is sort of kind of the criteria that has been used mm-hmm. most often to have something anti-inflammatory. Is there currently any evidence for that for drink like kombucha or any similar kind of products?
You know, this is not my area of expertise. However, one of the most intriguing studies, because again, I came to this as a jock. Think of me as a proverbial jock. I wanted to be bigger, faster, and stronger. And so anecdotally, out of the gate, I was already experiencing the benefits in a high-stress, high-performance lifestyle. So I didn't need that. I had already experienced those benefits enough to convince me to leave a six-figure engineering job and make fermented tea in my mom's house. However, I'm not blind to the fact that there will be skeptics outside of innovators and early adopters, right, who are going to need more convincing in order for them to try something like this. One of the most compelling studies that I saw was looking at fecal matter transplants in mice. And through no other changes outside of introducing beneficial microbes into these mice, they were able to reverse obesity and type 2 diabetes. And fecal matter transplants, if you're not aware, is just poop, right? You're taking healthy poop from a healthy mouse, you're putting it into a fat mouse or a mouse who has diabetes, and they were reversing these obesity or type 2 conditions without any other intervention. And again, it's a mouse study, right? It's like, it's kind of gross for taking poop and putting it into something else. But I thought that was an unbelievable case study to think about what else is possible if you were to introduce beneficial microbes into a not just a human, but mammals in general. And when I saw that, it was like, man, I can make this, this could help me be a better athlete, but could do more than that. This could help a variety of individuals, especially in the United States, that are suffering from these kind of overweight, obese, or diabetes related conditions. And so again, I don't want to make claims kombucha is going to reverse obesity or type 2 diabetes. That's not what I'm saying. But what I did see in some of the literature was extremely convincing that if you were to introduce beneficial microbes into somebody, that it could achieve the desired results.
Yeah, and I would add a few pieces of evidence that are even, you know, even more exciting and more pertinent to this topic. So one is that it's been shown that the microbial composition in mice actually plays a role in the motivation for exercise. That the composition also had an influence on the endurance, because these microbes would change certain lactic acid molecules into short-chain fatty acid molecules, which can then be used as fuel by the body.
Whoa.
And another one, you know, that this was a controlled study that people showed, like from the Stanford research group, the Sonnenbergs, that they showed when they compared individuals, healthy individuals that either took were consuming a largely plant-based diet with a lot of variety, compared to one that consumed a diet high in naturally fermented foods, so not probiotic pills, but naturally fermented foods, that the group with the fermented foods actually had the greater benefit in terms of anti-inflammatory changes in their blood, and a more beneficial effect on these individuals' gut microbiome. And the most interesting was that it would not just be the microbes that were in this ingested food, the fermented food, mm-hmm. but that diet attracted microbes that were neither in the ingested fermented food nor in the gut before. And all of a sudden, they appeared as major players in the gut microbiome. Where mm-hmm. they came from is not clear. It could be that they were there all along, but were in non-detectable amounts. So now with this, you know, increased fermented food intake, they would become measurable. And then there's a study, another study, which I think was one of the earliest ones, relates particularly to the rugby theme, a study from Ireland, from an organization called the AFP, a research organization, the AFP Ireland, where they looked at rugby players, their microbiome. There were definitely changes in the microbiome of the rugby players. And the study was not designed to control completely for dietary changes, which obviously there were, must have been. The rugby players ate a lot more meat and protein and, you know, then, but there were quite significant changes. And we know now that extreme athletes, you know, like ultra marathon runners and triathlon participants, it's not good for their microbiome. They actually develop the same changes in their gut microbiome as people under chronic psychological stress. So the body perceives these severe perturbations as stress and threatening, and mobilizes the immune system. On the other hand, if it's moderate but regular exercise, which has the opposite, it has a beneficial effect. So somehow I could imagine, it's just a hypothesis, you know, when you as a rugby player and your colleagues or teammates that played, that you may get a benefit because the rugby playing and training, which I'm sure is pretty rough, may border on the realm of actually being a chronic stressor to the gut, that if you take something like a drink that facilitates and improves your gut microbial health, will have a significant benefit. You know, it's so there's a lot of pieces that I think supports your approach indirectly. I'm not using kombucha, but definitely this concept of naturally fermented foods, which include, you know, kombucha. So I find that very credible, I have to say, like the arguments that you make and the personal experience that you had, because not many consumers have that experience. You know, they're not elite athletes, so they can't really say, I feel so much better with drinking a product like that. But if it comes from you as a, and also with sort of a scientific background, makes it also more credible to me than somebody just saying, you know, they just came up with this and out of nowhere. So yeah, I got really excited when I heard about your work and your product, and now listening to you explaining this, this makes it, you know, really confirms my initial excitement about this.
Oh, thank you for sharing that, Dr. Mayer. I feel like it just made sense to me. The more I felt like it was Alice in Wonderland and I fell down the rabbit hole, and I just started discovering that this could be the next frontier of health and wellness, right? It unlocks another part of our nervous system, the enteric nervous system, which until recently was largely unknown. It unlocks this idea that, back to our intuition conversation in the beginning, that there's neural activity going on in the gut, and that intuition could perhaps be coming from this part of our nervous system and is now communicating from the brain in my head to the brain in my gut. And one of the things that I find so fascinating about peak performers in the sport world is we often categorize them as electric or intuitive. How did he know that was going to happen? How did he know to position himself in that way? He must have just sensed it. And up until this point in my journey, I didn't realize this was likely quantifiable in some way, that this person is doing things that are helping their gut health and helping them unlock abilities out of their enteric nervous system. And whether that's getting sunlight or sleeping well or drinking clean water, or there's all this research into grounding and or earthing, right? Balancing the electrons and the protons in our body and how that relates to how electricity travels throughout our body, that these great athletes had intuitively stumbled their way into accessing parts of our nervous system that have largely been undiscovered. And it just, it fascinates me. I could talk about this subject for hours on end.
Maybe you could have another podcast on that. For this conversation right now, I mean, coming back to these side effects of extreme sports, so you know, extreme athletes. So I've seen in my practice quite a few marathon runners or ultra marathon runners that have developed gastrointestinal problems. So this could be, you know, bleeding from the colon or you know, significant symptoms from their large intestine, and it's been well studied. And you know, from a couple of studies, it's been shown that this goes along with increased intestinal permeability, so all the mechanisms that we know lead then to chronic or can lead to chronic system-wide activation of the immune system. So do you think, or have you seen any evidence that, like amongst the players that you interact with, A, that they have these symptoms during training or during a game, and B, were those symptoms positively affected by, you know, drinking kombucha? Is that, do you have anecdotal evidence for that, that they would say, you know, I used to get these problems, but ever since I've changed my dietary habits, I don't have this anymore?
Anecdotally, I hear it all the time. And it, I think we would call it overtraining. So, but I think it's a combination of overtraining and under recovering. And there's some buffer zone in between those two. And it's spoken to some of the things I talked about before, right? Are they sleeping well? Are they eating well? Are they getting sunlight? Are they grounding the electrical activity in their body? But oftentimes I've heard from people the only change that they made was drinking kombucha, and it was a noticeable difference in this overtraining, under recovering buffer. It was just enough to push them over into the edge. And I think for a lot of athletes, and not just athletes, right? Peak performers. Like when I think about this, the human body doesn't differentiate stress, right? Whether it's physical stress, emotional stress, mental stress, environmental stresses. Our body doesn't know the difference. It experiences stress and it has a biological response.
Exactly.
And so when you look at people who are under pressure in the boardroom or who are under pressure on the rugby field, what we experience is this overtraining, under recovering buffer zone, and we're constantly going up and down. And what I discovered was kombucha was just enough to give me that lift where I'm maybe out of that stress state and I'm a little more resilient. I'm able to navigate those changes in stress. And there is some research I've seen in resiliency and in relation to the microbiome. And it's just fascinating to hear these stories of guys who were maybe overtraining, under recovering, but are then having indigestion or irritable bowel syndrome like symptoms, or mental symptoms, right? Anxiety, depression, lack of motivation to show up to training, and how these things are lifted by consuming a beverage like kombucha or eating some kimchi or incorporating some type of fermented food in their diet. And there's also something to be said for community and having people to talk to about that. That is also fascinating to me in to this culture double meaning word, right? Like developing a culture that embraces that. And because rugby is a very brutal, macho, like can be egotistical in a good way, right? Our ego is meant to protect us, or it's meant to allow us to stand up for ourselves in some ways. But being able to talk about that vulnerability in a culture so that you can get help for it, is something that I find really unique about the sport of rugby, is that outside of the other mainstream sports that I've been a part of, wrestling, American football, soccer, we're embracing this connection between mental health and physical health in a holistic way that is by far beyond anything I've seen in many of the mainstream sports.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, what you alluded to, you know, what I call the brain-gut microbiome system, I strongly believe it's one of the most important homeostatic regulators in our body, because it has access through the brain to the outside world and through the gut, through another aspect of the outside world, the dietary influences, and they're so closely interconnected in both directions that they, if they're in a healthy state, they, you know, they have a very high degree of resilience. So you can undergo a lot of stressors, either at the gut level or at the brain level, and the system will respond to them, you know, not by, by not getting sick, by basically overcoming it. And I think this whole story of the benefit of naturally fermented foods has a lot to do with balancing that system, particularly if it's strongly disturbed during extreme exercise, or if you start out with a weak system in the first place, which many people, this happens early in life when the system is programmed. But you're not doomed when you have an incompletely programmed brain gut microbiome system. You can overcome it later in life with certain interventions, such as diet or, you know, lifestyle, healthy lifestyle. So I think we've almost come to the end of this conversation. It could go on for a long time. I mean, we've touched on so many things, you know, even outside kombucha. One last question. So in terms of healthy lifestyle, what are your dietary habits? What would you recommend to people based on your own experience? And, you know, you're pretty knowledgeable now from being involved in that in that space. What diet are you on?
Yeah, I feel like I've tried them all. In the beginning, I was very macronutrient focused, counting my macros, how I started. Then I got into making them clean sourced, right? So making sure they were organic or they weren't sprayed with pesticides or chemicals or things like that. Throughout my experience in the food manufacturing plants, I learned about the preservatives and all sorts of things that are used and wanting to avoid those. I think the best resource I have found has been the Weston A. Price Foundation. But I say that with the caveat that everybody has different goals, right? So my goals as a high performance athlete are different than other people's goals. And I think consistency is the most important thing. Your microbiome will adjust, right? What you're consistently eating, your microbiome will adjust to. But I tend to say, stay away from things that are made in plants, eat things that grow from the earth. And if you can do those two things in moderation, right? I enjoy a frozen pizza here and there, or I enjoy some sweets every now and then. I think moderation is important to stress test your microbiome, make sure that it can break down and properly detox things if you are exposed to some of these compounds that are maybe not so healthy for you, right? You can train the warriors of your gut to go to work. You don't want them to sit around not doing anything. But I've found the resources at the Weston A. Price Foundation. His book, Nourishing Traditions, kind of comes from this more primal, more ancestral way of living. And again, to this caveat, right, that we all come from different cultural backgrounds, right? So I grew up as an American, but I'm a second generation Irish and Croatian immigrant. So what I tried to do was think about the historical context of my ancestors and what did they grow up eating? Because my microbiome originated from them. And I don't know that a lot of people understand this, but your microbiome is passed down through the mother. And so we're, for lack of a better analogy, a sourdough starter or a culture that has been passed down to us from our ancestors. And those ancestors grew up eating certain types of foods. And so I typically encourage everybody to try to find clean sources. If you're eating meat, find a local farmer. Make sure the animals are eating grass, stuff that grows out of the earth. If you're staying away from meat, eat plants that have not been sprayed with chemicals or pesticides that could irritate your gut microbiome. And then become curious, right? Like, where did your microbiome come from? And what did your ancestors consume that allowed you to be birthed into this time and enjoy this life that we have here.
Great sentence to end this conversation. Thank you so much, Matt. I think this was extremely useful, not just for myself, but hopefully for many of our viewers. And where can people go to learn more about your company and your product?
Yep, we're on kombuchade.com. So KOMBUCHADE.com. I'm on LinkedIn at Matt Lancor. I like to post about some of my dietary routines or other theories and thoughts that I have about foods and the microbiome. We're on all the social media platforms with Kombuchade at either Instagram or Facebook. And if anybody has interest or thoughts or wants to reach out to me directly, my email is Matt, M-A-T-T, at kombuchade.com.
Okay, Matt, thanks again. It was wonderful. Hope to we talk in the future again.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to part two here. We can get a more of a deep dive into several of these topics. I feel like we just scratched the surface here today.